listening to the Warden Alumni Executive Education Podcast.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Wharton Alumni Executive Education Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Kramatsky, and today I'm talking to Billy Grineisen, who was previously director at Cox Enterprise and now is a consulting and advisor for various startup companies. So it's great to have you on today, Billy. How are you doing?
I'm great, Alex. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so doing advising and consulting work is pretty exciting for, I want to say, startup companies. How'd you get into that and what kind of companies are they?
Yeah, it's a continuation of the work that I was doing in my previous role, digital health space. I'm not sure how much I can say about the companies at the moment, but, you know, everything's associated with trying to create better health outcomes, increasing access, improving the patient experience. Just trying to make everything a lot better for patients and people.
But most of your career has been in the health and wellness space, is that right?
It has, yeah.
And what are some of the things that you've been doing in that space? Because you've had a long career working at many different companies, having many different roles. What's your career trajectory been like?
Sure. Maybe I can give you the sort of succinct high level, and maybe we can dig in if you feel like there's an area of interest. So look, my passion has always been to help people discover their healthiest self. Growing up as a young man, I felt very fortunate to have healthy role models. And it's something that I always wanted to try to give back to other people. Largely the way that I have sort of carried out that mission or that why or that passion is by building and scaling very purpose-driven health companies, either in the preventative digital health space or the tech-enabled services space. In my most recent role, as you mentioned, I was the director of strategy and corporate development for a large privately held Fortune 50 company called Cox Enterprises. In that role, I was responsible for developing, leading, and executing our strategic thesis in the healthcare space. As part of that, I was directly responsible for deploying over $200 million worth of capital across roughly 10 companies in a variety of different segments in the healthcare space. So everything from care model innovation around primary care, payment model innovation in the commercial space, value-based care, chronic disease management, behavioral health, medication guidance, and a number of others. I'd say all in that role, we looked at over $6 billion worth of deal flow. Prior to that, I was a successive entrepreneur. So I built and scaled several different companies in the preventive health space, the most recent of which was backed by Techstars. We won the Johnson & Johnson Innovation Award through that work, which was really incredible and quite a privilege. And then prior to that, I tend to say that I started my career in academia. So after finishing my PhD, I was a research scientist and clinical anatomy instructor. I published about a dozen papers, peer-reviewed medical papers, helped lead the instruction for over 1,000 medical students and allied health professionals. And that research, maybe I should just mention, was around obesity, metabolic syndrome, and some of the dysregulated inflammatory pathways that occur in those circumstances. So I'll stop there and happy to dig in where you feel appropriate.
Yeah, so how do you go from academia to then going to be an entrepreneur? Because sometimes those can be very different things. A lot of people that are in academia might stay in academia, and entrepreneurs often, you know, don't go into academia. But I'm assuming some of the things that you found in your studies, you know, gave you a calling then to want to do something about it. And that's maybe where the entrepreneurship came from. But please go on and share your story.
No, it's a really interesting question. I appreciate that. Actually, I have a call next week with somebody just kind of going through this, because this is kind of what they've dedicated their life to. So I think I have a very unorthodox background. As I was going through graduate school, both my master's and my PhD, I had built a health consulting business. So it started off just helping people sort of get their heads around changing their lifestyle a bit to incorporate healthy habits into their life. And as I, you know, progressed through my education, there was more and more services that I was able to provide for my client base. I was very fortunate. I had negotiated a contract to work out of a hotel. I was based in Honolulu, Hawaii. So in addition to my local clients, folks that I would work with on a regular basis, I would get this weekly influx of dozens of people from all over the world. So over the years, I had quite literally worked with thousands of people from all over the world, which was really quite amazing to kind of gain a vantage point into what everybody is struggling with health-wise, and kind of understand some of the commonalities between folks. So as I was finishing up my PhD, I was considering pursuing a postdoc, right? The traditional, I'm using air quotes, you know, the traditional path, or continuing my business. And I have to tell you that my heart was in the business. That's what I cared about. That's what I truly lived for. I think I was living my best life when I was doing that work. And I chose to continue on that path. I had an opportunity to go to Columbia to do a postdoc in the College of Physicians and Surgeons. But I had a client approach me, and we can talk about this. We've talked about this in the past. A client approached me and asked me if I'd be interested in working with them full time, doing some traveling. And so I decided to do that. I think I'm very fortunate because I had built the business as I was going through graduate school. You know, I'm not sure if the story would have been the same if I, you know, finished school and then started the business, but that's kind of the way it went.
So it seems like you touched quite a few people when you were in that space and come across them for, you know, people to come across and ask you to travel with them. And it seems like you must have had a real big impact for somebody to ask that of you, and you must have really known what was going on. How do you think what you were doing was similar or different from what other people are doing in the health or preventative space?
So back then, this is like where you're dating me with my bald haircut as well. You know, this was like circa 2010 to 2013-ish. A lot of the technologies and tests and diagnostic tools that are around today, like the DNA test, the microbiome test, the lipidomic test, proteomic test, they weren't as readily available then as they are now. So working with some of these, I would say, I'm doing the air quotes again, more high profile clients, they had access to those resources, something that was not, you know, available to sort of the common, you know, you and I, or the common sort of Joe and Jane. So I think that was unique to those individuals. If that kind of answers your question.
Yeah. And what then made you go from doing that into your next ventures?
Yeah. So I was working with a particular individual. His name was Paul Walker. He was an actor, I think best known for his role in the Fast and Furious franchise. He and I had been working together for a number of years, and like I said, when I was finishing up my PhD, he had asked me if I'd be interested in coming on as a basically like a personal health concierge. And really what that meant was managing a international team of multidisciplinary health specialists. So I'd be in charge of managing, there's a team of primary care doctors, specialists, geneticists, physical therapists, nutritionists. He was managing some health issues that the world didn't really know about. And he asked me to help manage all of that, in addition to create a plan to kind of get him where he needed to be. It was a very stressful role, actually. There was a lot of traveling. There was very tight production deadlines, and my work was very visible to groups like NBC Universal, which I was also getting paid by them. But at the end of the day, long story short, so we, you know, Paul and I were back in Los Angeles on Thanksgiving break when we were filming Furious 7 in Atlanta. I was on my way back up to LA usually he was a pretty easygoing guy. We would usually crash at his mom's house if we were flying out of Los Angeles. So I was on my way up to LA. And I got a phone call from his best friend. He was a wreck, and I could barely make out what he was saying. But he said, I made out the words eventually, that he said, I think Paul's dead. So he got in that, he was in a car accident. He passed away. That kind of closed one chapter. Happy to talk more about that. But really the what led to the next iteration of the business was the fact that that model wasn't very scalable. You know, it's and if you could figure out a way to enable other health and fitness professionals to do high quality work leveraging technology, that was really exciting. So I'm kind of giving you the summarized version. There were a couple of years that went by, but that's what led to the most recent tech company.
Yeah, well, thanks for sharing that story about Paul Walker. I know, you know, many people missed him, and he was an incredible person and actor. And
sure,
it was very tragic when that happened. But by the sounds of it, you got very deeply intimate into you know, his health, and got very deep into health and what people can do when they have the resources on that side of things. So that makes you much more from the academic side, also mm-hmm. practically very invested. You realize though, hey, you know, for one person, this is what I can do and understand, but now maybe there's something I can do to impact and help more people on a larger scale. So what did you end up doing then to bring this out to a more broad scale on the preventative or health side?
Yeah, sure. And by the way, like the, you know, the whole point of doing something with somebody like Paul Walker, you know, I think we all could use more inspiration in our life. And my thought process back then was, if I can do something positive for this guy, he has such a reach and scale to influence and impact other people in such a positive way, that that was kind of my way of, as I kind of mentioned at the beginning, right, to kind of share health and wellness and all those things with a broader audience. So yeah, so that was kind of the angle there. The goal, to answer your question, of the more recent business was to enable more health and fitness professionals to do that same thing with clients. So there's a lot of businesses like this that basically kind of turn these business models upside down. I think it started largely in like massage therapy with companies like Soothe and Zeal. The way that it works generally is like a massage therapist will work for a company, you know, say the session is like $100, the masseuse will make 30 of those dollars and the house gets to keep 70. And so they're like a Soothe or a Zeal have flipped this model upside down, whereas now the therapist gets 70 and the house gets 30, but they've used technology and sort of outsourced those skills and allowed people to sort of connect instead of in-house, doing that in the privacy of like your own surroundings, like your home or your office or something like that. And FitSpot, the business that was post Paul, was that concept, right? Allowing fitness professionals to work with folks one-on-one. And that really helped solve a significant barrier for a lot of people. I think if you're first kind of getting started on your health journey, going to a club or doing something publicly is really difficult for people, you know, and it can be very humiliating and just such a barrier that it will stop you dead in your tracks from making any progress. So the whole point of that business was, let's help people access these services, access these professionals in a comfortable surrounding and an environment in which is going to work for them.
Yeah, and I've never really thought about it from that perspective, but my assumption based on what you said is, were a lot of the people then significantly overweight? Is that why they're uncomfortable to go into the surroundings of a club? And I'm just speaking for me personally, like, you know, whether I was to go into a club and, you know, also have an athletic background, like I wouldn't mind going to a personal trainer in, you know, whatever, Good Life or LA Fitness or whatever the case is. But it hasn't really concerned to me what other people's experiences might be. But yeah, I can imagine, you know, if you're overweight, or you have no experience in the gym or lifting weights, you don't know what to do or where to go, that could be uncomfortable. But please, I'm totally speculating. What's the actual customer profile, so to speak?
No, I think that's definitely part of it. I wouldn't say it's always, I think there's a bell curve, you know, like everything. And that's why I wanted to make the distinction, right? Like, clearly people are more interested in work with celebrities like Paul, or I've spent time with like Elton John and a handful of other professional athletes and things of that nature. That's always like intriguing to people, but the meat of the business and the real people that built the business were just, like I said, ordinary everyday folks. And yeah, I mean, a lot of a lot of it is that maybe people just don't feel comfortable. A lot of folks just, they weren't raised with any of this. Like they don't have, I know you grew up playing soccer, right? That was like you were, that you just lived and breathed that. And you know, just, that's just a lifestyle, right? A lot of folks don't have that. And I think people like you and I grew up in sports as well. I was a college athlete. You know, it's not intuitive to us until you spend time with some of these individuals. And I think that's why building that business on the backs of people from all over the world and hearing these different perspectives has been so valuable and something that I've been able to take with me throughout my career, just to better inform, you know, as we're looking at Cox, when we're deploying capital, thinking about the end user, thinking about these patients and the life that they're actually living it's a lot different, you know, practically than what you might put up in a deck or, you know, some sort of investment memo, right?
That's a really good point. And I hadn't considered those things. So thanks for sharing that. How do you market to those people? How do you reach them? And what did you end up doing with that company? Because that seems like it's super needed. And now that I think about it, it's like, yeah, you know, my wife didn't really know how to work out and she hired an instructor and, you know, I'm teaching my son how to work out and how to lift weights. But if I wasn't doing it, you know, then he wouldn't know. He'd be, you know, whatever, 18, 20, 25, 30 one day and be like, I have no idea how to bench or what exercises to do and things like that. So it's kind of interesting that you bring it up consciously now.
You're a good papa. I think those are the way that I feel. So my father was a gunnery sergeant in the Marine Corps. He was kind of like Superman to me and I looked up to him. My mom had a number of congenital issues. She had really bad scoliosis, but she always had a really positive attitude in managing all of her issues. And so I think for your kids, like having a role model like you is going to be really helpful. I almost feel like I was born into a trust fund, although we were broke growing up for sure. But having health is, you know, super valuable and something that they're going to take with them. So kudos for doing that. To answer your question, you know, when you're getting something off the ground, I mean, it is grit. It is just determination. It's passion. It's pulling up your bootstraps and doing anything and everything you have to do to get the business off the ground. So to do marketing, I mean, we'd be beating down gym doors, talking to trainers, talking to different instructors, getting involved in the community. You know, there'd be maybe different sort of like talks or meet and greets, or you're just hustling. I mean, you're doing everything you possibly need to do to get a business off the ground. I mean, you know this very well with just what you're currently doing, right? There is no supplement for getting out there, hitting the streets and just doing the work that needs to be done. Being scrappy with a small team, learning quick, making adjustments when you need to, and just continuously iterating. And that's, I don't think there's any secret sauce. It was just good old fashioned hard work and passion about the project.
And then eventually though, you went on to Cox Enterprise, right? Was there an exit or what's going on with that company?
Yeah, they continued on. A number of us had left. One of the other co-founders had decided that they wanted to kind of go a different direction. And so, like I said, the company still lives on today. I think they're doing something around more employee engagement. I think that was, I think the catalyst for that was largely driven by COVID, just because everybody was remote and, you know, you've seen a lot of these businesses pop up. So all is well, and that's great. And everybody's gone off to do bigger and better things. So I was actually recruited by Cox. They were starting this healthcare project. They're not, you know, I wasn't very familiar with Cox prior to working with them. I don't expect folks to be. They're, like I said, they're a $21 billion conglomerate, largely in the communications and automotive space. Healthcare is not an industry that they've been in. So when they asked me to come on as a consultant originally, the goal was to create an effective M&A strategy that they could start to work from in order to start placing chips in, I'd say, the very progressive side of healthcare, right? If we think about what healthcare is going to look like for the next 10 to 15 to 20 years, where can we start, you know, investing to really help move the needle in regards to some of those things I mentioned at the front end of the call, right? Increase outcomes, create better access, improve the patient experience, lower costs, all of those things. So that's the genesis. And once we had a 9-month consulting gig, we pitched to the C-suite. They were really satisfied with the work. They're really pleased with what we wanted to do. So they offered me a director role to continue to lead the charge on that.
So you've had a ton of different hats. But if I want to label them, so to speak, it'd be you went from academia on the one side to then, some degree doing lab testing with Paul, and then going to being an entrepreneur and then to a consultant with Cox, which is really different hats and experiences that you would have gone through and lived through. That's kind of quite incredible to hear that journey of all these different paths. And now after Cox, you're now working with startups again as a an advisor, or what's your role in some of those startups, and what made you want to go from working with Cox to then working with startups again?
Yeah, no, I mean, full disclosure, look, I'm looking for my next opportunity and set of challenges. So I would say, look, if anybody listening is doing something interesting and something piques their interest, by all means, don't hesitate to reach out. I love learning from people, and I love learning about, just interesting things that are going on. I have some time. Every year I take on a new challenge. I try to do this in my personal life. I think it's important to do. After moving on from that previous role, I actually went through the fire academy to become a volunteer firefighter. That's actually what I've been doing this summer. It's something that I had wanted to do for a while. And so I've undergone a few hundred hours of training for that. I've gone on a bunch of calls and just something that I wanted to do. During the pandemic, I felt really fortunate, just as I'm sure many of us do, who were pretty insulated working from home from a lot of the pain and suffering that was going on. So I actually pursued my two medical licenses, my EMT basic and my advanced EMT. And when I was in Atlanta, I'm in Philadelphia now, but when we were in Atlanta, I was doing a lot of volunteer work on the ambulance and in the emergency room during the pandemic. So just tried to, we have a limited amount of time here on this earth, and this is something that I've wanted to do. So I'm doing that now, and at the same time, looking for whatever that next set of challenges is going to be.
Well, it sounds like you're very disciplined. Plus, don't forget that you also did the Wharton program at some point. I forget when you completed that program, but to continue to add the certifications to your life, these are invaluable life experiences that you're integrating into your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think if we talked about sort of the greatest obstacles and accomplishments, the work that I was, I very much appreciate your kind words and compliments of the multiple hats. I think, what made the work possible at Cox and deploying, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of capital into a brand new space was all of those things that we talk about through the Wharton program and, everything, strategy, marketing, finance, leadership, negotiation, right, is huge, influence, the M&A side, private equity, venture capital, not to mention, the wealth of knowledge that comes from the extremely talented colleagues that we all get to kind of learn from in these class structures, right? The way that things are set up. So I'm eternally grateful for the opportunity I've had at Wharton and what I've been able to take from that. And I think that has definitely propelled me to the next level. So I appreciate everything.
So if you had a magic wand, what would you do? I know you said you're looking for opportunities and something might come along, but what does the magic wand look like that here's what I want to do, here's what I dreamed of, here's my vision, so to speak?
I think at the highest level, Alex, I really, I just want to continue to help people live healthier lives. I mean, I think you can do that in a number of different ways. And, you were generous enough to point out just sort of these different areas that I've been able to contribute in. And I just want to continue doing that. I want to work with great people. I want to work on a problem I care deeply about. And I want to feel like I'm making an impact. I'm kind of size agnostic on company. I mean, just as long as folks are focused on growth, that's important. I've always I've always been in very athletic roles, I would say, wearing multiple hats in strategy, operations, and business development and sales. So yeah, as long as I'm feel like I'm, you know, making a difference in people's lives and helping people discover their healthier selves, that's all I really care about at the end of the day, to be quite honest with you.
And on the health side of things, are you more curious or driven by the personalized health, or what's your philosophy on that? Like, do you think, you know, everyone's health is very specific for them and what they need to do is specific for them? Or is there something, you know, on a broad scale that everyone should or shouldn't be doing, and this is something that society is just missing and just completely doing wrong?
I think taking care of yourself these days is actually really hard. You know, I don't think our societal infrastructure is designed for a healthy lifestyle. You know, it really takes a lot of time and energy to kind of break away from the system, take a step back and consider what you're kind of doing on a day-to-day basis, you know, it's really hard. That's not an excuse not to do it, you know, and not to make steps to improve, but I think people are really struggling, and I think it is a challenge. And I think having a sort of empathetic hand in the journey is actually quite helpful. You know what I mean? So I just saw a study that was done at Stanford. You know, AI is all the buzz right now, right? So they were looking at improving people's health using AI. And what they found, the conclusion was that AI in combination with an empathetic human being actually led to better results than just AI alone. You know what I mean? So I think you can't understate that sort of human touch component. But it's not easy. You know, people need support. People need to be inspired. And it's definitely a challenge.
Well, the connection and the attachment, so to speak, to somebody else, and that could just be a positive feedback loop that will help with maybe external internal validation to help keep people going, versus if your priorities aren't right from the get-go, that's kind of how you ended up here with the habits that you've already implemented. So unless there's somebody to guide you or change you and point that out, you always kind of default to your old way of being. So yeah, change is very hard, and I recognize that, and I totally agree with you on that the system, it's very hard. Even if you think about like things with inflation, people think they have to work all the time, like all their energy is committed to work, and it's very hard to get out of it. It's very hard to step back and say, you know what, I'm gonna focus on me first, because that's important, and here's the things I have to do and have to take care of. Because sometimes health, it's not like a one and done thing, it's a continuous ongoing thing, and I think it's very hard because that requires discipline that you've shown in your career and your life, and that's a long-term commitment. And I think sometimes that's the trade people are lacking, especially in an instant gratification world.
I totally agree with you. I think those are that's a great sentiment, everything you just shared. When you think about the social determinants of health, still might be kind of a buzzy term, but there's a sort of structure of your longevity, really, let me take a step back. Only 10% of your health is determined by care that you receive in a healthcare setting. The other 90% is defined by factors that exist outside of healthcare, right? Like you just mentioned a bunch of those things, your lifestyle management, your genetics, your zip code is the primary determinant of how long you'll live, actually. So it's access to those resources. And it's actually, so having that, unique vantage point into people's lives, getting the opportunity to work with people one-on-one was incredible. EMS and the fire side of this whole equation, and having the privilege to enter people's homes and care for people in their homes, you get to see how people live. And it's really rough. I mean, some people are really having a hard time, and I don't want to go into a ton of detail, but I mean, it's just people are struggling with some of the basics. It's almost like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? There are certain things that need to be addressed first in order for people to start making moves in other areas, right? Like food, shelter, security kind of need to be locked in first before you can start climbing that pyramid. And so, it's tough, but it's good to be aware. I mean, awareness is you know, one of the first steps in the process. So,
I know what you mean. We're traveling somewhere on a trip, and we wanted to give this homeless person some food. So we went to the 7-Eleven or whatever it was around the corner. We bought him just a bunch of different foods, and we gave it to him. And then he's like, I can't eat this stuff. I don't have any teeth. And then he showed us. I'm like, so we got him like some nuts and some cashews and some pistachios and like some other things. And he's like, I can't chew this. I'm like, oh my God, you're never going to. And then my immediate thought was, you're never going to be healthy if you can't eat this stuff. Like, so it's just really sad to recognize some of the struggles that people have.
Yeah.
Not sad things. So anyways, we ended up getting him some bread and some peanut butter. And then he's so grateful for that as well. But it was just wild to recognize the obstacles that some people face that we can't even fathom.
It's hard because you would never think of that, right? Teeth. You just kind of assume that just they're just there. But yeah, no, totally. I appreciate you sharing that story. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So you've seen a lot. You've done a lot. Touched a lot of people in deep ways. That's really, really cool on that side of things. What's one thing for yourself personally then on your health journey that has helped you the most, if you want to, you know, be your own case study, and something that maybe people will walk away from and say, hey, that's something I want to try? Because there's all these like biohackers out there as well. And I'm not saying that that's what you're doing. And maybe it's just, you know, innate to you at this point, but it'd be cool to hear a little bit about some of the healthy things that you're doing as well.
Oh gosh, I would tell everybody to do not follow anything I'm doing by any means. But if you're going to push me to throw stuff out, look, I've just tried to focus on creating a routine. I think that's, for me, having structure is really important. You know, I have tried to push the time that I dedicate to my health sort of early and earlier in the morning. I mean, before we jumped on the podcast, we're talking about our children. You know, I have a 2-year-old. And as soon as he's up, it's kind of all about him. So as of recently, I've been pushing my workouts to very early in the morning. So the alarm goes off quite early, and I'm moving around just to make sure that it's always there. Like, you know, the morning hours are really sacred. They feel quite holy, actually, when it's just quiet and nice. And it takes a long time, though, to crack that nut and start dragging yourself out of bed. It's not easy, but I would say that it gets easier over time. But yeah, structure number one, wise choices. Actually, not too long ago, for the first time in my entire life, I actually bought a little food scale and just started weighing out just to see like what I, because I was eating healthy food, right? Like organic mangoes is a great example, right? I get these like big bags from Costco, and it's kind of like, I feel like it's kind of cheating because it kind of tastes like fruit. It's like a candy when we were kids. It would like fruit roll-ups. Kind of tastes like fruit roll-ups. But I was thinking, you're eating quite a lot of these. Like, what is a portion? And when I actually measured out a portion, I was blown away. Like, you've given me all these kind compliments. Oh, you're in academia. You've done all these things. I didn't even know what a friggin' portion was, you know. And when I realized what that looked like, I really started to try to be more conscientious about how much I was taking in, you know? So little things like that, like the awareness, that is how it shows you how bright I actually am. Right. This is what we are.
No, I wanted to hear some of your thoughts. Cause for me, you know, I could give a few pointers to what I think. I think, you know, only drink water, so to speak, is one for me.
Holding it right here.
And eat the pop, like obviously don't smoke. And then for me, you know, eating organic, I think is also really important, just because there's pesticides and poisons and all that stuff, right? And it's not good to poison your body. It's bad for your gut health, in my opinion. And then I know sleep is super important for me as well, because it's, you know, the natural energy source. It's how we refuel ourselves. It's when our body heals.
Way to show me up, Alex. I was trying to throw some great stuff out there, and you just
I'm actually just interpreting the things you said, because you talked about sleep when you talked about your son waking up. I saw you drinking water, right? You're talking about organic mangoes. Like, I'm actually just picking up on the things that you put in. Okay,
so, you're a sweetheart.
Yeah. So I'm just expanding on the things that you already said. To be honest,
you're a kind gentleman. You're a kind gentleman. Yeah.
So it's really cool to hear some of those things from you, because I think we're very aligned on that side of things.
Thank you. Thank you. I also think it's helpful. Like, there's a happiness factor, something that I feel like I discovered quite a while ago. I think it's important to try to incorporate some things in your life on a regular basis that you actually really enjoy, you know, and kind of pursue those activities. They don't need to be fitness related by any means, but I think just having time to get away, you know, we're in these like work cycles that don't end, right? Where your phone's always blown up and you always feel like you're having to check emails, or you've got to put together this deck over the weekend because you have to have something to show by Monday. And it's, you know, it's very stressful. Like none of us are impervious to that. Like it pervades us at a very deep level. And so I think having extracurricular activities that you can, you know, really geek out over is really important. You know, years ago, I got into skydiving, that led to wingsuiting. Then we got into some base jumping and some other stuff. And it allows you to, I think, just harness your mind around a totally different topic and to just sort of break away from that other stuff, which I think, you know, on the behavioral health side of things is just extremely important. You know, and just very difficult to do, frankly.
Yeah, no, I totally hear you, and it makes a ton of sense. And I think my hobby is actually going to the gym, but I also like it. And I'd recommend it for you to find one where you can take your kid, because they have a little daycare at the one we go to. So she loves playing with her friends, you know, and then I can stay as long as I want there, and even bring my laptop sometimes there and just stay a little bit extra.
That's really smart. I don't want to admit to people that I go to a crappy LA Fitness, and I don't know if I'd want to put him in that little kid area. So I need to up my game is what I'm taking from this.
I go to LA Fitness and ours is really nice. So maybe it's your zip code.
I think it's the zip code. That's fine.
It is. Is there anything else you want to dive into or share today with some of our listeners, or about your story that we didn't get into, or maybe I didn't touch on?
No, look, I'm very grateful that you had me. You know, I know that it takes a lot of time and energy for you to do this. It took us a while to put this one together. I really appreciate it. I'd also say, you know, thank you very much to Wharton for making this all possible, and to all of my very impressive colleagues and comrades in the executive education program. I've learned a ton from you. I continue to learn a ton from you, and I am thrilled to be part of this community. So thank you all very much.
Well, thank you for being on today.
I appreciate it, Alex. Have a good one.